News.
The U.S.'s elite campaign of killing, destruction, and starvation against Palestinians in Gaza continues for the 158th day. The Israeli occupation forces kill three more Palestinians in the West Bank as the regime intensifies its deadly crackdown in the month of Ramadan. Also in the headlines, Lebanon's resistance fighters fired dozens of rockets at Israeli targets in the northern occupied territories following the regime's airstrikes on Lebanon's Baalbek. Thanks for joining us. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are seeing no ease in their suffering as Israeli bombardment and siege continue even during the holy month of Ramadan. Here's the moment when a new airstrike targeted the southern city of Rafah. The regime struck the central city of Deir al-Balah twice, killing nine Palestinians and injuring a number of others. At least nine people also lost their lives after Israeli troopers once again opened fire on aid seekers in Gaza City. The death toll from Israel's genocidal war in Gaza since October the 7th stands at over 31,000, most of them women and children. People in the war-ridden coastal sliver broke their fast on the first day of Ramadan on Monday. The sacred month has begun while Gazans are grappling with severe starvation, with most residential buildings being reduced to rubble. Now let's take a listen to comments by some Palestinians in Rafah describing their misery and hopes for a lasting ceasefire.
First day of Ramadan is very tough. We don't know what we are going to cook, what we are going to have for iftar. There is no gas. We get out of the tent in the cold to light fire, and it's really cold. How are we going to cook? Also, the prices are unimaginable. Prices of the tomato and the potato. The prices are high. We can't get meat or chicken. Everything is very expensive. In this situation, we don't want aid. What we want is a ceasefire.
We're happy that we're in Ramadan, but we're not happy that we've been displaced from one place to another. We don't want to stay in a tent. We want to settle in our homes and for things to return to normalcy, and may God bring peace and fix the situation. We don't want food or drink. We want to return to our homes, check on them and stay there in happiness. We are living and sleeping here in fear.
I'm 71 years old and I have never experienced a Ramadan with this feeling. It's an awful feeling. At times like this during Ramadan, I used to prepare the dining table to eat at sunset, but today there is no food and I don't have money to get food for iftar at sunset.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, in a message on the occasion of the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, has called for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip to honor the spirit of this month.
Today marks the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a period when Muslims around the world celebrate and spread the values of peace, reconciliation, and solidarity. Yet, even though Ramadan has begun, the killing, bombing, and bloodshed continue in Gaza. My strongest appeal today is to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required.
Vessel carrying humanitarian aid for Palestinians has set sail from a port in Cyprus and is now en route to the besieged Gaza Strip. The vessel is being sent by a Spanish NGO, Open Arms, and is carrying 200 tons of food to Gaza. The move is aimed at opening a new sea route of aid to a population that is on the brink of famine due to restrictions and the genocidal campaign by the Israeli regime. This is the first time such a shipment along a maritime corridor is being sent to Gazans, who are in dire humanitarian conditions. The Israeli regime has consistently blocked the entry of aid into Gaza, leading to famine-like situation in the Strip, already under crippling blockade for years. The UN has repeatedly warned that almost everyone in aid-starved Gaza is at risk of famine. A number of Palestinian children have died as a result of acute malnutrition. There's no respite from Israeli violence against Palestinians, whether in Gaza or elsewhere. The regime's forces have taken the lives of three more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Among the dead is a young man who succumbed to the wounds that he sustained during an Israeli raid on an area near the city of Jenin. There were two other deadly raids north of the city of Tulkarm. In one of those incursions, the regime forces shot a 25-year-old Palestinian. The other raid took place near the town of Atil, where undercover Israeli troops killed a Palestinian man. Since October the 7th, occupied territories have been witnessing intensified raids by the regime's forces. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands more abducted in the West Bank in over 5 months. Monica Ndil joined us earlier from Ramallah to give us more details on the latest Israeli deadly raids in the West Bank. Let's take a listen.
Israeli forces disguised as Palestinians or as Arabs raided the towns or an area between the towns of Allar and Zeta, northern Tulkarm, and they succeeded, this Dovdivan unit succeeded to murder a Palestinian, Muhammad Mustafa Jaber, 32 years old, originally from the village of Arabi in Jenin. The Israeli military claimed that this man, Mohammed Jaber, was on his way to carry out an anti-Israeli operation inside the lands that were occupied 1948. So Jaber was inside one of the shops there when the Dovdivan unit, the undercover units, arrived at the area, and they claimed that he had a gun and that he had opened fire at them before he was shot and killed. And of course, his body was confiscated by the Israeli forces. Several hours later, another Palestinian succumbed to his injuries. The Palestinian paramedics said that a Palestinian was seriously injured and was transferred to a hospital also in the same area. Several hours later, the Palestinian Ministry of Health revealed that Tawfiq Hussein, also from the town, from Jenin, was shot, wounded, and then succumbed to his injuries.
The Israeli regime has carried out a series of new airstrikes on Lebanon, triggering retaliatory rocket attacks from the Hezbollah resistance movement against the occupied territories. According to Lebanese officials, Israeli strikes hit the eastern city of Baalbek and its vicinity. Some of the airstrikes targeted an area near the city of Taraya, 20 kilometers west of Baalbek. In response, Hezbollah says it fired more than 100 rockets toward Israeli positions in the occupied Golan Heights and the Galilee region. There were no immediate reports of damage or casualties from Hezbollah's strikes. This is the first time that Israel has pounded eastern Lebanon since the eruption of exchanges between the regime and Hezbollah. The resistance movement has said that it will continue attacking Israeli targets until the regime stops its genocidal war on Gaza. But the Israeli military has recently carried out aerial raids, even on residential areas in Lebanon. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Sadeh, for more details about the latest exchange of fire between Israel and the Hezbollah resistance movement.
They do target Baalbek and eastern Lebanon in the vicinity of the cities of Taraya and Baalbek itself. We know that there was total destruction of the buildings that were targeted, and one person has been killed. Previous time, also, it was more of an open area that was targeted the previous time, like agricultural lands. There was some sort of a residence there, but that also led to the killing of two Hezbollah members. And now with this in place, it seems that Hezbollah has basically become impatient with the Israelis' presumptuousness when it comes to how they are targeting Lebanon. The fact that they're trying to put a lot of pressure on the resistance and on Lebanon itself, with the fact that you do have some opposition from Hezbollah's political foes when it comes to Hezbollah's supportive front for the resistance inside Gaza and for the people of Gaza. And so it seemed that this is why Hezbollah had, in retaliation, launched some, we're talking about more than 50 rockets that were witnessed or that were reported in some areas. The Israelis are talking about more than 100 rockets from on two different rounds. A group of rockets was against the Galilee region. Another salvo was against in the Golan Heights. And it seemed that many of them landed and struck their targets. And how that will play out also is another surprise. And the number of rockets that Hezbollah is showing day by day, seemingly increasing and targeting areas that are further off. Yesterday, for example, they targeted areas in the Golan Heights more and more. And so it seemed that for Hezbollah, they are basically unifying the land when it comes to how they target and what they target.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a retaliatory attack on Ben Gurion Airport deep into Israeli-occupied territories. The Umbrella Resistance Group says it targeted the Strategic International Airport with a drone. It vowed to continue operations against what it called enemy strongholds in support of the people in Gaza and in response to the Israeli genocide against Palestinians. Since last October, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli positions in the occupied territories. It has also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for its complicity in the genocide in Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces say that they have struck yet another American ship in the Red Sea, vowing to step up their maritime operations in support of Palestinians.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship Pinocchio in the Red Sea with a number of appropriate naval missiles. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that their military operations will escalate during the month of Ramadan in support of the oppressed Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip.
The Yemeni strike has been confirmed by the U.S. Central Command, but it claims that Yemeni missiles did not impact the vessel and caused no injuries or damage. According to CENTCOM, U.S. forces carried out 6 retaliatory attacks, destroying an unmanned underwater vessel and 18 anti-ship missiles belonging to Yemen. Tensions have been running high in and around the Red Sea over Israel's genocide in Gaza. Yemen has, for a number of times, targeted Israeli-linked vessels in the crucial maritime lane for trade. In response to anti-Israeli operations, the U.S. and U.K. have repeatedly launched airstrikes against the Arab country since mid-January. The Yemeni armed forces say that despite the aggression, they will continue its operations in solidarity with Gaza. Pro-Palestine gathering at the University of Vienna. Students call for an end to Israel's massacre of civilians in the Gaza Strip. A group of protesters called Students Against Genocide held a gathering inside the university, waving flags and banners in support of Palestine. They chanted slogans demanding an end to the genocidal war in the Gaza Strip and the occupation of Palestinian lands. Protesters also demanded a meeting with the university chancellor, who they consider as complicit in the Gaza genocide. They cited the cancellations of lectures on the history of Palestine, which have increased since October 7, and the funding of an Islamophobic research project by the Academy. The students also urged for an end to the academic cooperation between the University of Vienna and Israeli academic institutions. The protest was broken up by the police, who encircled and held the students for almost an hour. The students were also threatened to be charged and fined for public disorder. The Islamic movement in Nigeria has held a protest against the massacre of innocent Palestinians in Gaza by the Israeli military. Protesters marched on the U.S. Embassy in the capital, Abuja, and staged a sit-in. Danjuma Abdullahi has more.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria, the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the U.S. government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community. Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
To understand the unsavory alliance that has held the United States and the Zionist regime together is to understand that they are cut from the same cloth. Both regimes share a ruthless, exploitative settler colonial ideology and psychology that has set them on parallel social, political, and economic paths. They have existed by exploitation and churning the cauldron of division and conflict among countries in the region. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, in addition to encouraging Israel-Arab economic ties, Washington has been actively promoting the furtherance of cybersecurity linkages. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, for example, at a cybertech conference in Tel Aviv on February 3, 2023, announced an expansion of the Abraham Accords to include an agreement on cybersecurity. By giving official recognition to intelligence sharing and security agreements between the Zionist regime and the Arab states, the Accords have made the spyware business easier and more lucrative. The Persian Gulf regimes, believing that linkages with the Zionist regime will shore up their security ties with the United States, have become eager customers of advanced surveillance technology, which they also see as useful in policing their populations. The child killer regime of Israel, one of the world's top spyware exporters, has been more than willing to sell its technology with little regard for human rights abuse. The United States, the Zionist regime, and Arab states have become deeply enmeshed in the cybersecurity intelligence world. The Zionist regime has positioned itself in the international order through its global cybersecurity surveillance web and the lucrative global tech weapons industry that have developed around it. Washington's steadfast support for and unwillingness to criticize the Zionist regime can plausibly be attributed to the cyber power and economic clout that together they have been able to wield in the region and globally. The ongoing collaboration between the U.S. National Security Agency and its Israeli equivalent, the Secretive Cyber Unit 8200, the Tech Intelligence Unit of the Zionist regime's occupation forces, is just one example of the cybersecurity network that has linked the two regimes. Former troops of the elite cyber warfare unit, for example, have gone on to found and occupy top positions at cybersecurity and international IT companies and in Silicon Valley. Google, for one, has two offices and over 2,000 employees in Israel. Washington cares little that the Zionist regime's cybersecurity companies, numbering 700, export their spyware around the world, or that unit hunts its intelligence skills through mass surveillance of innocent civilians in the occupied West Bank and Gaza, personal information that was used to blackmail Palestinians to turn them into the Zionist collaborators. Zionist hubris, facilitated by the U.S. regime, has no bounds. After stealing Palestinian land, water, and pillaging Gaza, the Zionist regime has been seeking to plunder the maritime offshore natural gas reserves that are the property of Palestine. On October 29, 2023, amidst its brutal war in Gaza, the Zionist regime's Ministry of Energy and Infrastructure announced that it had awarded licenses for natural gas exploration in areas that overlap with the recognized maritime borders of Gaza. As an occupying power, the Zionist regime has no legal right under international law to award licenses in areas it does not hold sovereignty over. The bidding process for the illegal licenses was launched in December 2022, a year before the Zionist regime's horrific assault on Gaza. Licenses were issued to six companies: Ratio Energies and NewMed Energy Israeli, ENI Italian, Dana Petroleum UK subsidiary of Korea National Oil Company, SOCAR Azerbaijan's National Oil Company, and British-owned BP. The U.S. Zionist economic and military stranglehold over the region has been challenged by the colonized Palestinians in Gaza, who have bravely resisted despite having no sizable army, air force, or sophisticated surveillance technology or weaponry. Gaza has become an inspirational symbol of resistance in the West Asia region and worldwide, a reality the U.S. and the Zionist regime will be powerless to overcome. To understand the unsavory alliance that has held the United States and the Zionist regime together is to understand that they are cut from the same cloth. Both regimes share a ruthless, exploitative settler colonial ideology and psychology that has set them on parallel social, political, and economic paths. They have existed by exploitation and churning the cauldron of division and conflict among the countries in the region. After half century of steadfast support, it has become virtually impossible for Washington to imagine a regional reality that does not have the fabricated regime of Israel at its core. The United States regime has finally been forced to confront the brutishness of its ally and to recognize that Zionists and they have no place or future in the West Asia region.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the holy month of Ramadan has started for Muslims around the world. This month is known for its peace and blessings. But this year, the whole Islamic Ummah, Islamic community, must deal with the fact that their brothers and sisters in Gaza are experiencing a U.S.-Israeli Holocaust. What does that mean for them? And what will this month of Ramadan mean for the 2.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, who are still undergoing the Israeli genocide? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Kim Sharif, a Yemeni activist and a lawyer out of London. And Zafar Bangash, director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought out of Toronto. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, Kim, I'm going to start off with you. I mean, as a Muslim, what does it mean to have gone through the last 5 months or so, seeing this genocide take place against the Palestinians? And what does it mean for you to go through this month of Ramadan, knowing that they are still being subjected to this Holocaust?
Good evening to you, Marzia. This is just a sheer torture of humanity at large, worldwide. Even non-Muslims are being deeply affected and traumatized by what's going on. As you have quite rightly pointed out, a lot of people are saying the same thing. This is the Holocaust, and it is abominable. It's an abomination in our modern time, in history, at this particular point in time, to allow something like this to happen and then to continue, and then to see no end in sight in this holy month where all their mosques have been destroyed, flattened to the ground, their homes. They are existing in rubble, and it's a torture. We're all being tortured. We're all being traumatized by what's going on here, because these people are our brothers and sisters in faith as well as in humanity, being tortured right in front of our own eyes. And we are affected by this. And millions of Palestinians who are not allowed to return to their homeland abroad are also affected, very deeply affected by this. And this is going to leave a very stinky, dark stain on the conscience of humanity, and in particular, those who have been aiding and abetting it and continuing to aid and abet this, knowing full well that it is a very serious crime. It is a supreme crime under the UN charter and legislations. And which is being fobbed off with empty words such as airdropping of aid and that kind of thing, and that's just completely neither here nor there, while you are supplying enormous amount of weapon and aid to this regime, to this illegal regime that is committing this Holocaust against the people of Palestine. It's awful, awful. We're all very traumatized by it, and we would like to see it end like last night, not tomorrow, last night, because the majority of the victims are also, we need to note this, women and children. This criminal regime has been specifically targeting women and children for a specific criminal agenda that it is trying to put further in this campaign, this illegal campaign. And the idea is they don't want any future generations of Palestinian resistance. They regard resistance of Palestinians as terrorism. On the contrary, the whole world is now aware of the fact that it is this regime that is the terrorist here, not okay. the Palestinians. And we hope that it will end very soon.
Excuse me, stay with me, please. Let me get Zafar into this discussion. Well, throughout these months, we've seen the strength and the faith of many Palestinians while going through the most difficult of times. They have been strong and even inspiring others. Your take, what do you attribute that side of things to, Zafar?
Well, what we are witnessing in Gaza and among the Palestinians in general is their strong faith, their iman, in the face of these barbaric attacks against them, against their women, against their children, against their infrastructure, whether it is hospitals, schools, dispensaries, bakeries, their homes, their apartment buildings. What this shows is their immense, immense commitment of faith. And that is what really keeps them going. They have actually inspired people worldwide, not just Muslims, but also non-Muslims who see their resilience and their determination in the face of these barbaric attacks. At the same time, I think it is important for us to realize that what is referred to as the international community or international law is a pathetic joke. It's a sick joke against the world, against the oppressed people. International law is only invoked when the aggressors, for instance, have to carry out certain crimes against other people. But when innocent people want to defend themselves, then international law, the UN Charter, and all of these things go deadly silent. We are witnessing what the Americans are doing, basically are the underwriters of Zionist crimes in Palestine. They are providing the Israelis bombs and missiles, and they have provided diplomatic protection. For instance, they prevent Security Council resolutions to be passed. Not that Israel has ever cared about any United Nations Security Council resolutions, but even so, the Americans exercise their veto, which is a totally illegal instrument. And so we see that on the one hand, the Palestinians are showing immense determination and resilience, but on the other hand, they have exposed the criminal nature of the international system, the United Nations, and these so-called Western powers that are all composed of hypocrites and terrorists and who are the enemies of humanity.
Well, Kim, listening to what Zafar said about exposing what these entities really are, I mean, isn't the reality is that this has always been the reality? This international law was set up for certain countries to benefit from. But what has happened, at least during the last 5.5 months, is that more and more people have seen more clarity in this area to realize what the reality is. Or how do you see it?
Well, no, I mean, I totally agree with what you have said, and I also totally agree with what Zafar has said. Historically, it's always been the case that the UN has been used against non-European white people when it came to enforcement of criminal sanctions, for example. And it never got applied against white Western powerful nations such as the US itself, which is guilty of genocide itself historically, and even to this present day it's continuing its campaigns, because this campaign that's going on in Gaza at the moment wouldn't go on if the US steps in and says no, stop it now. Actually, it's the US that wants to continue doing it. US sees itself as an empire and colonial sort of agenda that it's trying to further in the world. Yes, it has the laws have been applied inconsistently. But what the Gazans have shown, their determination, steadfastness, and the Palestinians generally in their resistance have shown the world is that the depth and the level of hypocrisy and vindictiveness of the Western allied nations, including the criminal illegal regime in Palestine. And it's been a great opportunity to explore what's really going on in Palestine. You see, historically, we only had Iran, may Allah bless you all, and the Axis of Resistance Nations and its friends that were bringing out the suffering of the people of Palestine. But now the whole world is involved in this. The whole world has seen what has been going on for 70 years. Even Jewish people themselves are now in line with the resistance, saying enough is enough and no for this. And so whilst historically it's been like that, but then in the present case, it has now been an opportunity to unmask the hypocrites and to show the rest of the world that this can't continue. As you are aware, Africa has become a more power to reckon with economically, South Africa in particular and its application. And I have recently heard one of their Syrian ministers making a speech where she said that if any Israeli national attempts to come into South Africa, they will be arrested. And so many other nations need to be encouraged to do the same thing, because the law can be explored, the facts can be explored at the UN level, because that's an opportunity. The whole world looks to the UN for these kind of issues without being aware of the inconsistencies, the racism, and the colonialism that has been applied to the UN system. Now people can see the facts and the law as to what has been going on in relation to Palestine, and nations like South Africa can then take steps to reinforce those rules by taking independent sanctions steps, like I have just quoted the minister that I heard there. I was very pleased to hear her say this. I think she's the foreign minister, and I don't know her name. I thought I was almost in tears when I heard her speak yesterday. And so many other nations are taking similar steps. And
okay,
with the strength and the determination of the Palestinian people to survive, their resilience, their steadfastness, their faith, their strong faith, as our colleague has just said, Zafar, this will bring an end to this inconsistency, to this racism, to this colonialism. We just need to be strong and carry on doing this.
Okay.
And
let me get Zafar back in on this. Zafar, this genocide has been broadcast live, and I want to look at that situation, because it's the first time that we have 24-hour nonstop and seeing these unbelievable images come across our phones or screens. And I want to talk about the effect that this has had because of social media, because of those journalists on the ground in Gaza, and actually showing the reality that it has allowed for more and more people to become aware. And as Kim has said, that people all over the world now are reacting to this genocide, which, of course, it's nothing new, except it's taken a different form. But this time it seems to be that more people are aware.
Oh, absolutely. And this is to the credit of those journalists who have, are put their lives on the line in Gaza in reporting this. You mustn't forget that at least 123 journalists have been killed in Gaza by the Zionists, and they've deliberately targeted them because they don't want the reality to come out and the reality to be shown in the world. I think we need to sort of, deconstruct this situation in a way that whereas The mainstream media, by and large, pursues the Zionist narrative, whether it's CNN or BBC or New York Times, etc., whereas the other, what is referred to as the alternative media, which is outside the control of the Western media, that they are able to present the reality on the ground. Of course, among Western journalists also, there are some brave souls that have spoken out, but I think they are mainly on the alternative media platforms. That's one aspect. The other, of course, is that as far as the Palestinian people are concerned, their cause has now been taken up by the masses of the world. They have actually seen not only their resilience and their steadfastness and the validity of their stand, but it has also exposed the Zionists as never before. Because in the past, the Zionists always trotted out this claim of, you know, Holocaust and Islamism and so on. And now people are witnessing in real time that a Holocaust is being perpetrated against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Not only in Gaza, even in the West Bank. For instance, last night, Palestinians were prevented from going to Masjid al-Aqsa to participate in nightly prayers. The Zionists had set up checkpoints in Jerusalem, in the old city, East Jerusalem, and they were checking everybody's bags and so on. And according to reports, they prevented people who were under the age of 40 from going there. Dozens of people were arrested. And this, I think, is something that we are likely to see more and more in this month of Ramadan, because the Zionists have a very determined campaign. They want to destroy Masjid al-Aqsa, and they want to build their mythical third temple. There are all kinds of, you know, reports coming out, and I think we need to keep that in mind. And even while the genocide in Gaza is going, that Masjid al-Aqsa is also under attack. And naturally, in occupied West Bank, more than 1,000 Palestinians have been kidnapped and put in prisons. Horrible torture is being inflicted on them. This is now becoming widely reported, and I think it's something that needs to be spread more widely. But unfortunately, it is not having any impact on the regimes in the world, particularly Western regimes, because they are all complicit. This genocide with the Zionists, particularly the United States, which actually is underwriting Zionist crimes. And we know that because it's an election year in the U.S., that both candidates are vying to buy the Zionist lobby support or to accrue to themselves their support so that they could get back into power. And that, again, once again, actually exposes that America is Zionist-occupied country. It is not a free country at all. And I think the rest of the beginning to recognize that as well.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
If we look at the name of the operation on October 7th, Al-Aqsa Flood, we understand the significance of Masjid Al-Aqsa. And we all recall the clashing or the total unbelievable cruel actions by the Zionist regime last month of Ramadan and then on at Masjid al-Aqsa. So using this point of what's happening in the West Bank and in Gaza, what do you think it's going to take with this new awareness by people of what is going on to bring all of this to an end?
Well, I expect there to be a much wider international movement, grassroots movement, to keep up and sustain the pressure against the Western regimes that back this criminal regime from different perspectives, including using domestic laws to prosecute those who are aiding and abetting them. But the point of the Al-Aqsa is that it is a Muslim symbol. And one would have thought that all Muslim nations would be united here and make a very strong move to bring an end to this endless suffering of the people of the West Bank as well as Gaza. But unfortunately, we're not seeing that. We're seeing some very good Muslim nations doing their best, and some of them to their detriment, like Iran, for example, and Yemen. And there are those who are not doing enough, and there are those who are actually helping the criminal regime continue this. When we used to say about the plan of the building of the temple, the third temple, people used to joke and laugh at us and call us conspiracy theorists. But the reality is this is not a conspiracy, it's a factual reality. The reason why they continue abusing the Palestinians in the Al-Aqsa area is to prevent them from coming there. They want the Palestinians to give up their right to be there altogether and maybe even leave Palestine altogether, just like the other 7 million who are stranded abroad. And then they can have the space all to themselves and do what they like with it. But I believe there is a grassroots movement, which is very strong, notwithstanding the amount of abuse we are getting from our own authorities in terms of labeling us extremists, labeling us troublemakers, doing everything they can in their power to also abuse us here, to prevent us from making some noise about this Holocaust in Palestine. People are carrying on. I mean, I know one famous star called Charlotte Church herself faced enormous amount of abuse online and elsewhere and accusations of anti-Semitism, etc. But she's carrying on. So this grassroots movement, just like it freed South Africa from the apartheid regime back then, will also free Palestine. And I'm confident about that. We just need to stay strong and carry on and support our brothers and sisters in Palestine, whether inside Palestine or outside.
Excuse me. Yes, well, Zafar, what Kim has talked about and this movement that needs to grow. I mean, I also want to look at the pressure, though, on the other hand, that the Zionist regime is feeling internally, because we see this definitely, although they're continuing and doing what they want to do against the Palestinians, but we do see cracks in the regime. We also see, for example, the ultra-Orthodox Jews are... are actually fighting back because they want to recruit more soldiers. They need more soldiers. The economic situation. I mean, let's talk about inside of the regime itself and what is happening. And of course, we know the anti-Netanyahu rallies that were happening even before all of this took place.
Yes, absolutely. I think there are deep cracks inside the Zionist entity itself. There are several factions. For instance, you mentioned the Orthodox Jews. 1.3 million of them who have not served in the military, and they refuse to serve in the military because their thinking is that they should be in occupied Palestine only to study the Torah. And of course, they receive subsidies from the government. And at this time, the fact that the regime of Netanyahu is contemplating recruiting these Orthodox Jews into the military indicates that there is a tremendous shortage of manpower in their military, the attrition that they have suffered in terms of the number of deaths that they have suffered, the number of traumas, the tens of thousands of Israeli soldiers that have suffered from trauma, and the tens of thousands of Israelis that have been wounded. This has really, really sent a shockwave inside Israeli society. That's one dimension of it. But as you mentioned, Netanyahu had been against him because he's been involved in a corruption scandal. There are charges against him. And, you know, it is absolutely certain, in fact, that, you know, the moment this war stops, Netanyahu would be in handcuffs, he'd be dragged to prison, and he'd be charged with several, you know, charges. Number one, his corruption charges, nepotism, and then his opponents are also accusing him of failing to Israeli public because, you know, he considered himself to be the Mr. Security, and then it was on his watch that that brilliant operation that Hamas and Islamic Jihad launched on October the 7th, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, that I think really sent a shockwave through the Zionist society. And then you also have within the Israeli government, the cabinet, there are divisions over there because there are people that are not happy with Netanyahu doing this whole thing. They see him as trying to protect his own skin as opposed to protecting the Israeli people. And then you also have the families of the Israelis that Hamas and Islamic Jihad captured in their daring operation. These are prisoners of war, but their families are demanding that Netanyahu should do more to get their release. And of course, Netanyahu is not going along with that because he, as I mentioned, the moment this war stops, he ends up in prison. He basically sabotaged the discussions that were taking place in Cairo, whereby Hamas had made very reasonable proposals to end this war, not only for a hostage swap, the Palestinian hostages that Israel is holding, but also Israeli prisoners that Hamas and Islamic Jihad are holding, but that there should be a permanent ceasefire. Not that, you know, you give them their prisoners back and then Israel resumes its bombing and continue killing. Right. That is a non-starter, and that is something that Hamas will not accept. And that is, I think, a very, very important consideration.
Well, Kim, as the genocide continues, so does the resistance. Do you think the month of Ramadan will actually inspire the resistance even further?
I expect that because, you see, they have nothing further to lose. They've lost everything, practically everything. And all they have is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His mercy. And their connection with Allah is becoming stronger. And I expect that to be the case also with the majority of Muslims who have so far not been as effective as they ought to have been. And therefore I see changes taking place. And of course, you know, God has an amazing way of operating. And Zafar has just mentioned, there is tension inside Israel itself. And the Israelis themselves can see that this criminal bloke is carrying on this genocidal campaign for his own personal benefit and nothing to do with the people of Israel itself. And a lot of the Jewish people who will come out in the Saturday marches on Saturdays in London make it very clear that they are against this and they're not with it. And so there's a change happening inside the Zionist regime itself. There's change happening outside it. And the people of Palestine, we hope and pray that they will remain as steadfast as they are. And I expect them to be like that. In fact, maybe to grow even stronger because they have even more reason now to resist even more strongly simply because of what has happened to them. That, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is a very important principle. And I think that's going to apply to them. And okay. I expect that they will continue to be this way and stay strong, as we will do the same wherever we are and support them, stay strong, notwithstanding the barrage of abuse that we're getting from our own authorities.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with me, but we're out of time. Kim Sharif, Yemeni activist and lawyer out of London, Zafar Bangash, director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought out of Toronto. And thank you for staying with us for another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Hope to see you right here next time. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان لا
إله إلا. Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah, we worship Allah and no one but Allah.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, one of the significant points in Islam and Islamic beliefs is Ru'yat al-Hilal or moon sighting.
Mm.
It means that when the crescent of the new moon we can say is witnessed or is visited, that is a proof or one of the proofs for the beginning of the lunar month in religion. And usually during the holy month of Ramadan and the sacred months according to the Islamic beliefs, you know, this sightseeing is also very much significant. So let's explain it a little bit for our dear listeners who are not familiar with this concept of Ru'yat al-Hilal or moon sighting. What is it exactly?
First of all, we should know that we have lunar calendar, and this, according to this calendar, we have Qamari, or let's say Hijri calendar, yeah, in Islam. According to this Qamari calendar, that months begins by witnessing, or let's say seeing, the first day of moon, or the new moon, I mean. So the month starts with it, and then the months, the holy month or the Qamari month finishes when the new moon is about to be born. So that is why it is a bit different from the year according to the solar calendar.
Yes.
Which is completely 30 days each month, but since, or sometimes maybe 31 days. But in according to the lunar calendar, no, the month sometimes might be 29 days, less than 30 days. let's say, days. So that's why each year we have some 10 days different,
yes.
Difference between the lunar year and the solar year. This is what we should observe, the, let's say, religious rituals according to Islam. According to this lunar calendar or Qamari calendar, that, for example, we should fast when the moon is born, and yes. Then we finish the fasting when the new moon is about to be
born.
Yeah, this is what we have in Islam.
That's right. Also, we know that the Muslims, they have the tulu and ghurub, okay?
Exactly.
You can say the sunrise and the sunset. So yes. After the sunrise, you are not allowed.